I am now talking to a legend in cycling, somebody who has risen above racism in British society and in sport itself as well. He really has had to triumph over diversity, and I do not say that lightly. He's finally released a biography, despite the fact that everybody's been waiting for it for a really, really long time, because he's truly been a legend in cycling. And I'm very, very honoured to also say he's a bit of a family friend. So it's a huge coincidence to have him on here. And I'm very honoured to be able to ask him questions that I've wanted to ask for forever, really. Hi, Morris. How are you doing?
Hello, Anna. Glad to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's really great to hear you. I've just got you a bit quiet at the moment. Seeing you as a bit of a hero, you know, we've always looked up to you my whole life. I remember coming into your bike shop in Streatham as a very, very young girl and, you know, being told all about all of your achievements. And there you were, able to talk to you. And I remember your dog Rex that you used to have in the shop as well.
Yeah, 2002. Yeah, 22. Yeah, that's when he passed away.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I remember him, and he had such a strong waggy tail that it nearly knocked me over.
Yeah, great memories.
Yeah, it's funny the things that stay in your mind. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about your book and your history as well, because that's, you know, it is an autobiography. You were born in the UK to a Jamaican father and an English mother. So where was it exactly in the UK that you grew up?
The earlier part was Peckham and Camberwell. And then from the age of 8 years old, we moved to Forest Hill area. So Southeast London, basically, that's where I grew up.
Yeah, you're a South London lad through and through, really, aren't you? And how, you know, being from there and with your background, how did you get into cycling?
Well, it started off, Anna, because my father wasn't too keen. He wasn't keen at all on me riding a bike. He didn't want me riding a bike.
Really?
But, you know, that's right. But, you know, I used to, as a young boy, I'd see my friends, they all had bikes. Everyone had bikes apart from me. And, as with a lot of things with me, I ended up taking things into my own hands, and I bought a bike from a friend of mine. Yeah, I didn't pay a lot for it. And I got a bike for the first time, and I got on this bike, and you know what? There was nobody around that could, I don't know what it was, Anna. I could just ride faster than anyone.
How old were you? How old were you when you got your first bike?
I got the bike, yeah. 12. I was 12 years old, Anna.
And could you tell straight away that you had a talent? It was just something, you got on it, and it was in your genes?
Yeah. Yes, it was. It was, Anna. So, after watching Eddie, that was 1968, and after watching Eddie Merckx in 1969, I watched it on television. They didn't used to show much. It used to be about 10 minutes on a Saturday afternoon. So I saw Eddie Merckx winning the Tour de France in 1969, and I said to my dad, I said, that's what I want to do, Dad. And he said to me, he said, if you want to do that, you're going to have to eat steak every day. So I went to my mum and I said, Mum, I need to, from now on, I need to eat steak every day. That's what I said.
And did she do it for you?
I think she tried her best, yeah. Aww. You know, she did. So from that age, really, from, say, like 13 years old, I set my mind on being a professional cyclist. The problem was, Anna, is that I didn't know how or where to go to even start. You know, I didn't know about cycling clubs. We didn't have the internet like you have now, where you could just put a word into Google and it came up. There was, unless you knew somebody in the sport, then how would you know where to go or what to do? It was only when with the school took me to Herne Hill Velodrome when I was coming up to 15 years old. And at that point, the first time there, the coach at the time, Bill Dodds, he said to us, he had a talk with us, and he said, from here you can go to the Olympic Games, he said. And you know what? That's all I needed to know, really. Yeah.
And can you tell us what is a velodrome and what is track cycling for those people who maybe don't know so much about it in more detail?
Okay. So, track cycling, it's a cycle track specifically made for cycle racing. That particular track at Herne Hill has been there over 100 years. It was what they used in the Olympic Games in 1948, and
it's quite a prestigious place, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. So as opposed to on the road, to race on the road, on the open road, you'd have to be going out towards Kent or Surrey, these sort of places, which really wasn't going to work for me at that stage because I didn't have any transport and my parents didn't even really know that I was racing a bike.
Wow, okay, yeah, and, you know, obviously you were a young lad, so that would be mean being out on roads in traffic, but on a track, it's specifically dedicated to bikes, so there are no cars on it. And what are the bikes like that you ride on a velodrome?
Very basic bikes, no brakes, no gears, one single fixed gear. So you have to pedal all the time, you can't stop pedaling. If you try to stop pedaling, it will throw you off the bike. And the coaches there at Herne Hill, when we were youngsters, they always used to say to us, we had to keep our hands on the bottom of the handlebars. We weren't allowed to ride with our hands on the top. You know, they used to say, hands on the bottom, lads.
God, yeah. It is very specific, and it's all about going as fast as you can. And you realised that you were very fast, and you sort of started to discover this sport, going to clubs. When did you start doing sort of higher level races and really realise that this could be a career? And did you have a coach or a particular person that guided you in that aspect at that point?
It was from the time, as I said, when I went to Herne Hill, which was September 1970. The coach there was Bill Dodds. He was in charge. There was other people there at the time, Bob Addy, John Clary. John Clary had ridden the Tour de France. He'd had the Lantern Rouge in the Tour de France. Bob Addy was a former Olympic cyclist, professional cyclist. There was two or three like that sort, those sort of people. But Bill Dodds was the one who took me under his wing. So I started in September 1970, and then I learned how to ride with the club. I joined the club at the velodrome, which is the VCL Velo Londres. I joined the club in October 1970, and then I started racing in April 1971. Yeah, that's when I started racing. And the first race I rode, I came fifth. The second race, this was at Crystal Palace. The first race, I came fifth. The second one, on the Tuesday, the following Tuesday, I came second. And the first time at Herne Hill, which was the Monday competition, they called it Monday Comp, it was a track league, I won races straight away.
My goodness.
I don't think I hardly ever lost a race. As a schoolboy at Herne Hill Velodrome, never lost the race.
So there you are, just turning up almost out of nowhere, suddenly winning races. And what was your first sort of professional race or elite level race?
So when they say elite level, I'd say the first important race that I did was the National Junior Sprint Championship at Leicester. In 1973, I went there. I went to Leicester in 1973, but, I beg your pardon, 1972, when I was 16, second year racing, I went to Leicester, but I had a bike, one of the bikes from Herne Hill, which were fairly basic. They were very old at the time. and I'd never ridden on a steep bank track before. So I went there and I came fourth the first time I rode in a national championship. And the next year I came back again and I won. I won the junior sprint championship in 1973. Yeah.
That's super impressive. And there you are, you know, walking up to the podium, and it says in your book that you, this was...
That was the following year, Anna. That was 74, 1974, which was senior championship. That was that I, when they booed you, me, that one, yeah.
Okay, so we're touching on something that is utterly, it just makes me feel incredulous to even hear this. So in your own words, please tell us about your experience of, you know, you've just won an elite race. You must have been feeling really proud. You're walking up to the podium in front of all of the crowds. What happened?
Yeah, I was on the podium. They put on the jersey and the medal. And then when I lifted the flowers, there was some boos that rang out around the stadium. Obviously it wasn't a happy experience, but I still had that, even in spite of the fact that there was boos, I had a smile on my face because they might not have liked it, but whether they liked it or not was one of those things.
You were winning. And was that your first time consciously experiencing racism in the sport of cycling?
No, I wouldn't say it was my first time. No. I actually, as a younger rider, maybe the year before or so forth, first time coming up against senior riders at, say, Crystal Palace, especially, I've had experience of riders that once I've beaten them, they've never ridden, never raced bikes after that.
My goodness.
And apart from that, I had one guy that I beat on a road race. I won the sprint. And he took his bike and threw the bike on the floor out of disgust. But again, these things, I find it amusing in a way. I found it amusing.
You're laughing at it. Do you think it maybe fueled your fire a little bit as well? Have something
Absolutely.
Extra to prove?
I mean, I suppose it's not a nice thing to say, really, but you know, it kind of amused me to piss people off. You know? I got a kick out of it, really.
Bit of an antagonist there. No, well, good for you. You know, it's important that there is somebody who is shining a light on bad behaviour there. And was it something that you specifically experienced in cycling, or had you experienced this sort of... Was it reflective of society as a whole at that time, you know, this sort of racism, or was it something that happened more when you got on a bike and you were mixing in those circles?
Well, I don't think when I was a young man growing up, young boy, I don't think that things weren't set in place for us, for people like me to succeed. When I actually got on a bike and started winning races on a bike, it's the first time in my life that I'd ever felt that I was really good at something. You know, at school... Mm. As a youngster, they never gave us the inspiration to say, "Well, you know what? You should study to be a architect or a lawyer or something." No. That wasn't for people like me. You know, when at school, the careers advice at school, they pointed me in the direction of the cigarette factory in Deptford, where they made machines to produce cigarettes, I think Molins it was called, and that's the sort of level that people like me were supposed to be at. You know, God forbid you ever thought you should ever be an architect, or even like your father, who is a structural engineer. I mean, things like that. You know, they they put things like that right straight out of our heads, you know. Yeah.
That makes it even more impressive then that you had this dream of becoming a world-class cyclist and being a player at a global level. You were then had your sights set on the Olympics, and you were pretty much hands down the fastest in the country. Did you get to realise that dream?
No, it wasn't going to happen. When you say dream, and I'll be honest with you, the reason I wanted to go to the Olympic Games was if I could achieve to get a medal at the Olympic Games, then I knew that would be help me in coming in higher as a professional cyclist. I wanted the reason it was a stepping stone for me. It wasn't the be an end all. It was what I felt I needed as a qualification to enter into professional cycling. That's why I wanted to do it. And yeah, I mean, once I realized it wasn't gonna happen, then I turned my back on England and went to Belgium. And I did achieve what I wanted to, but I had to go around the long way. I had to go in on a lower level into professional cycling and work my way out.
And can you tell us why you didn't make it into the Olympic squad in Britain, and then why you felt that you had to move to Belgium?
Well, at the time, the people in charge, the coaches in charge, weren't really, I don't think they liked me too much, put it that way. Previously was a different story. The man in charge when I first started was a man called Norman Shiel, who was world pursuit champion in 1955, the year I was born. He was very much in my favour, and it was him that selected me for the Commonwealth Games in early 1974. Unfortunately, he left British cycling altogether and moved to Canada, and so the new people that came in didn't want me around in the squad at all, really. In fact, at one point, I wasn't even in the squad full stop, never mind going to the Olympics. I wasn't even in the squad. And there was riders in that squad. I don't think they'd even won a race at that stage. So, yeah, you could say that, you know, there was definitely something that wasn't right there.
Yes. Yeah. So you had all the evidence that you were the fastest, but presumably down to the colour of your skin, you weren't the one getting picked to be part of that group.
Well, I would say, and when you say I was the fastest, I mean that, you know, the other riders were good riders. There was good, but I was a lot of them were older than me as well. But I was in the position where I would beat them. I wouldn't always beat them. I'd beat them, and sometimes they beat me. But I was up there at least to have consideration. I wasn't even given that opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, until the last minute. They did at the last minute let me in. It became an embarrassment. And so they let me in. But I persevered with it and tried, but it wasn't going to work. And so once they made the selection and I wasn't in it, I just packed my things and went to Belgium. That's what I did.
That sounds like you're doing it all off your own back. You know, the book is called The Maurice Burton Way, so I'm starting to see why it's got that name now, because you're not getting the support and the resources around you to become a professional. How were things different in Belgium, or were they? Were you treated differently there?
Well, in Belgium, Belgium to me was similar to how it was when my two boys started school. They started school at St. Joseph's College up on Crown Point at Streatham. And when I went in that school before they started, I looked around and they had computers, they had everything. And I thought, you know what, they got everything they need to succeed. And when I first went to Belgium, it was the same thing. Everything that you need was there. The bikes, they had the correct bikes. They had the best mechanics. The mechanics that I worked with, these are people that worked with the Belgian national team, worked with Eddy Merckx. They were the best people. The masseurs and people like that, they knew, and they know how to set the position on the bike, how to ride the bike. You learn everything that you need to know about cycling. You can learn in Belgium. That's it.
Excellent. Yeah. So, you know, you finally had that opportunity where you got all the support that you needed and lived out a very successful career in cycling. But I have to start wrapping this up. And eventually, obviously, you retired from professional cycling and you started your own business running a bike shop, which is where I met you, Diverse Cycles. And you also started a cycling club, which always attracted people, a number of black people of colour. Was this something intentional on your part to try and give people opportunities that you felt that you didn't have, or was this just a natural evolution?
I think that that they just seem to be naturally drawn to me. They seem to feel at home riding with us, whereas other places maybe they didn't feel quite as comfortable. So they found a home, and there is some. I've got a training camp down here in Lanzarote. I'm starting in just over a week, 14th of April, and there is people coming on that camp that have known me for over 30 years, and they still ride with me.
Yeah.
Just like riding.
I say, you are a bit of a legend. And just a final question here, how you personally feel, what would you say makes you most proud looking back at your career? So the medals and the gold medals and the races that you've won, or would you say it's more the positive impact that you've had on your local community? You know that you're a role model for other cyclists, for younger cyclists, for cyclists of colour. What's the most important thing looking back at your career?
For me, the most important thing, it's as an example. And there has been people come to me and said to me, I've been an inspiration to them. I think the most important thing for me is the feeling that I had succeeded. I think with success, it's a matter of whatever you set out to do, whether it might be a small thing, might be a large thing, but, to be able to achieve what you set out to achieve, that's. And I think in my way, I achieved what I set out to achieve. When I look at where I am now and I think about it, I'm happy I'm happy and contented with where I am in life, what I've achieved. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Well, that's all that we have time for, but it's been wonderful to speak to you, hear your words of wisdom, and of course, promote your book, The Maurice Burton Way, which is out now. My mum will be down to receive her signed copy later on, and I can't wait to get my hands on it too. If you've enjoyed listening to this, you can get access to the book on the TRE bookshop, or obviously pop it into Google, The Maurice Burton Way. Maurice, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Anna. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.